folks. Welcome to A Different Direction. We cover stories of the strange, document the weird, stuff like that. I'm Dave.
I'm Diana.
And today, we're talking about the only episode of the show Snavely. Snavely. Like, I don't know if
it's Snavely Manor or Chateau Snavely.
Chateau Snavely or, yeah, one of those.
What's up? It's me. Snavely. There's a dramatic pause.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of dots, like more than three, like double the amount.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's hear about, oh my gosh, you're going to have to tell us about directors?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I do. But first, I have a message from one of the freaks on the message board.
Okay.
From the last episode of Ferris Bueller first.
Bueller? I don't know what happened.
Ferris! Okay, so we got a message from my friend Chris, Table Flips You on Twitter, who wrote shortly after the last episode came out, say, reflecting on the last Ferris episode, I think I'm with you in terms of not being able to recommend the show to anybody. It's got some fun moments, ironically and otherwise, but the idea of alternative universe young Republican Ferris wears off after a few episodes. But I'm very, very glad I watched it and watched it all the way through because it satisfied a pretty deep curiosity for me. Like, I know this is never going to come up, but I feel like if there's ever a, did you know that there was a Ferris Bueller TV show conversation in my life, I'll be able to speak to it with complete authority. Knowing that kind of ephemera is very satisfying to me, and at 21 minutes per episode, that's 3 to 4 hours of TV I'm glad to have invested.
Perfectly summed up.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That's honestly, I think, also this podcast.
Yeah, I was like, that's the show?
That's this show. That is
That's the show. So thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you for describing the show.
Yeah.
And also how we feel about Ferris as well.
Yeah. Like, honestly.
It was a Ferris wheel of emotion. It's a ride that we thought we were going to get off on, but instead got kind of stuck at the top for a bit.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. Yeah, I absolutely envision some very fun future conversations with the right sorts of people, just being like, you would not believe, yes there was a Ferris Bueller TV show and you would not believe.
I have literally already had this conversation a couple of times.
Excellent.
The best part is, it was with the same person. Because I had brought it up, and then months pass, and then I brought it up again, and they had the same reaction.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
That's so good.
I know.
Yeah.
That's my life. It's niche.
Yep. I also want to mention something that came up a few times last season. We did attempt, before we watched this, we did actually attempt to watch that, Disney TV movie, HG Double Hockey Sticks. It was painfully bad. We're going through with watching three pilot episodes of failed U.S. remakes of Fawlty Towers, and this Disney movie was too bad for us to go through with watching once for this.
We watched like 30 minutes or so.
Yeah.
20 minutes?
Yeah, 25.
Nothing had really happened.
Uh-huh. Except a lot of ADR. So much ADR that it wasn't ever clear that the person whose mouth was moving was always the person that was supposed to be talking. That wasn't always definitely true.
Right.
Rhea Perlman was great.
I know. Killed it.
Everyone else was...
Like, I just don't think there was anything there.
The script was bad. The script was bad.
What were they supposed to do? Just stomp around? They had nothing to do.
Yeah.
It
was weird.
We didn't even get to the hockey part.
Yeah, there was a little bit of hockey, but not much. It was just bad. We tried...
I was about to say... that watching that movie, the hockey player who is Matthew Lawrence, the one moment I saw of him seemed to just be him being Paris Hollywood. And Paris Hollywood is no one. I don't know. I think I was thinking about, like, Paris Hilton, like, some kind of level of celebrity that is just so... That was Matthew Lawrence as, like, a hockey player.
Yeah.
In what? Well, I mean, in the 90s, maybe, but then they went on that strike or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then... We can't handle a pause, as we've all seen.
Uh-huh.
Anyways. I'm off the rails today, Dave. You're just cut out on my rants.
No,
I don't even know what we're talking. Know what we're talking about anymore.
We're talking about wrap up stuff from the previous season.
Yes, obviously. Wrapping it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Going
back. Any of those things.
Going back in the wrapper. You can add some crinkly noises here. Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
All right. So with that, so what we're talking about this episode, we mentioned this in episode zero, but we should explain. So as I mentioned earlier, there are three attempts at U.S. remakes of the British show Fawlty Towers. We're talking about one episode each of the three U.S. versions of it. And we're starting today with the only episode of the first attempt at it, Snavely. So I'm going to talk about the writers and director on this one. So this had two writers. This were Dean Hargrove and Roland Kibbe, who were by this point a writing duo, though Roland Kibbe had been writing for a long time before Dean Hargrove started.
They had an ampersand?
Yes.
Yes! Love a writing duo, thing I never knew about until this show.
Yeah. Well, this is a like Kibbe Hargrove production.
Oh. Ovs.
Yeah.
Ovs. Don't think I didn't know that already.
Yeah.
Just from the aesthetic.
Now, to be clear, when I say that, what I actually mean is this episode was actually written by John Cleese and Connie Booth, and then Dean Hargrove and Roland Kibbe basically just came and made it worse. They took those things that were well written and they made them worse. I mean, did they not? Like, most of what's here are literal lines lifted fully from the episodes. Like...
Is that not what America is?
I mean, okay. But I'm just saying, it's like, a lot of this is like word for word lifted straight from Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, but that's intentional.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly the same.
No,
It would have been better if they just came up with totally original material and made nods to it.
Yeah.
That weren't just word for word.
Right. You could even have the same basic plot rewritten. But no, most of it is fully lifted to the extent that I think the last line in it is a line that literally only makes sense spoken by a British person.
I think it has something to do with marketing, and I've never, or like the PR that happens with how you like advertise this to people, and you're already working off something that people know, so hopefully they tune in because it's this, and they want it to be this.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, just be something else.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the writer's fault. I think it's the people, the networks, like, that water things down or want things to be a certain way because, you know, they make the decisions.
When I say the writers made it worse, there are things that written down that weren't in the original, and those words are bad.
Yes.
So... That's all I'm saying. Doing a thing, an episode about a show from 1978, when you look up the writers and director, you get a very different IMDb list than the kind of IMDb list than you get from a show from 1990.
This is very interesting because this is a show from before we were born.
Uh-huh.
And so... These writers are not, they're writing jokes and things for a totally different audience, which means an audience that was used to that kind of humor.
Yes. And we'll get into some of that in the content warnings. I'm going to talk about the actual literal list of stuff that they worked on.
I know, let's hear it. Is it going to be all like, I'm excited.
Okay, so Dean Hargrove, his earliest credit is on the Bob Newhart Show, which Roland Kibbe also worked on, but he had a bunch of credits before that. So I'm going to get into that in a bit. So after that, almost everything that Dean Hargrove worked on, except for this show, was like a legal thing, either like a cop show or detective, like legal drama.
I thought you meant they were arrested. They're like, they didn't work after this because they were in a legal thing.
No. Like, okay, they worked on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I know is more of a spy thing, but then there was Jake and the Fat Man. He was the creator of the show Matlock. He wrote a bunch of Perry Mason TV movies, did a four-episode series called Murder 101, starring Dick Van Dyke, after Diagnosis Murder, because he also worked on Diagnosis Murder, but he was working as like a forensics like professor. So, I mean,
who was
Dick Van Dyke?
Oh, you're talking about the writer, and yeah, now I'm...
Sorry, the series Murder 101 has Dick Van Dyke as a, like forensic professor.
When did that show come out?
In, like, the 2000s?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, in that time frame, he wrote 10 TV movie mysteries about a defense lawyer named McBride, starring John Larroquette.
Interesting.
Yeah. John Larroquette, which if you didn't listen to episode zero, he was the John Cleese equivalent in the third series that we're going to be looking at, Pain. The other writer, Roland Kibbe, who also wrote on the Bob Newhart Show and then a bunch of other stuff along with Dean Hargrove. Including one thing that I didn't mention with Dean Hargrove, which is a TV movie called The Return of the World's Greatest Detective, which was starring Larry Hagman from Dallas as a motorcycle cop named Sherman Holmes, who gets into an accident and then wakes up thinking he's Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
And this is where, when I said things get very different, This is with this director. The director is Hal Cooper, who had directed 127 out of 141 episodes of the show Maude, starring Bea Arthur.
Uh-huh.
It's in the other series we're going to do. He also did some episodes of The Brady Bunch, The Odd Couple, a lot of I Dream of Jeannie, and then one of his earliest credits is he did between in 1954 and 1955, he directed 257 episodes of a show called The Inner Flame.
Oh, is that like a soap opera?
Maybe I didn't look into it, but I was just like...
You didn't look into it? You're just this enormous number, but my research stops here.
I know.
That's fine.
There was
it's
so
fine.
Much. I was writing a lot. And then, one other thing is that he directed 68 episodes of Dear John.
Okay. Will I never escape this? Will I never escape this personal hell of Dear John? I don't even remember the show Dear John anymore. I don't know. I was a weird kid. I'm a weird adult. Let's just move on, Dade. Come on.
Is it not interesting when it shows up in these credits?
Of course it shows up in these credits. It's a great show. I do not remember it at all.
Okay.
Some people had hair on the show, I recall.
Yes, indeed.
I'm not 100% on that.
I am.
Okay. Are we ready to talk about the show yet?
Well, we got to do the content warnings.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to say, if you're watching this episode, there is... Just a really blatant rape joke in this. Just really, like, fully casual rape joke that happens, then, like, has a callback later. It's just very, like, it's really disgusting. It's a really gross joke. Like, it's not even, like, it's not even, like, oh, what you're hinting at is gross. There's no hinting. There's no subtext. This is text. It's literal text.
But I also think that it's saying something about the character that that character is a police officer.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. A police, an ex-police chief.
Yeah.
Anyways, is that the reason why this only aired one episode?
Who knows? Who knows? And I'm just saying, that's one of the things that was added. And it didn't need to be. Because it's horrible. I hate it. I hate this bit.
How do we know that's added? Added from what?
As in, it wasn't in the episode of Fawlty Towers that they lifted most of the script from.
No, but they had, like, things from different episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, this character isn't in...
Well, the character in Fawlty Towers is the major. He's not the chief.
Yeah.
And part of the joke is built around...
There's still inappropriate jokes sure. on Fawlty Towers.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to pretend Fawlty Towers is faultless.
I also think... I just don't think people would make a joke like that now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. All right. And with that, I guess I'll go into the recap. Before I start the recap, I don't know if we mentioned this episode or only in episode zero that the two hotel owners, Henry and Gladys Snavely, are Harvey Korman and Betty White. So that's important to know. I just want to mention that before I get into my recap.
Does everyone know who those
A lot of people are going to know who those people are.
Cool.
I'm just saying, like, people, I feel like most people who know Harvey Korman, they're going to either know him from the Carol Burnett Show or from Blazing Saddles, but...
Where do we know Betty White from?
I mean, I know I've heard the name. that just feels wrong even just coming out of my mouth. Like, obviously we know Betty White. We know Betty White from being a legend. And... That's the only correct answer.
No argument here.
All right. Okay, recap time. Have you watched Fawlty Towers? Then you've seen most of what's in this, just in the wrong order. If you haven't, here we go. This episode opens in the empty lobby of the Hotel Snavely Manor, where we quickly meet Pedro the waiter, who clearly speaks no English at all, and Gladys Snavely, who gets a phone call from another hotel manager named Roger. Roger gives Gladys some info, but we don't learn it right away because she's interrupted by her husband, Henry, who thinks she's just flirting with Roger. He also just found his mounted mountain goat. That's just hard to say. Mounted mountain goat. That Gladys clearly hid in the furnace. He's trying to hang it back up, and a guest is trying to check in, but Henry's annoyed at Gladys because he thinks she was flirting with Roger, and so he yells at the guest to wait. Gladys explains that Roger was actually calling to tell him that there's three hotel inspectors in the area from the International Hotel Guide. Henry realizes that this guest he just yelled at might be one of them, and suddenly gets very friendly and accommodating to the man, even though he hates running a hotel, and generally hates his guests. The guest is a Mr. Bishop. He's very demanding, to the point that Henry, trying so hard to be accommodating, offers him his and Gladys's room, since it's the nicest in the hotel. Later, Henry's trying to prep the hotel restaurant to be as nice as possible for Mr. Bishop when he shows up, and sees Gladys apparently flirting with another guest, who confronts Gladys about it, tries to explain, but he doesn't believe her, until she helps the guest take his bib off, and he's actually a priest.
Lobster bib.
Yes, his lobster bib, not just a bib. Yeah. I actually have that written down and didn't...
I'm a baby adult. adult baby.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not an adult baby.
Baby man. I'm a man baby. And please remove my bib for me to reveal... to reveal what...
He's a man baby priest. He's father man baby. We also then meet one of the other guests at the hotel, the chief, a retired police officer. That's all I feel like saying about this part of this scene. Mr. Bishop finally shows up and is shown to the nicest table in the place with a view of Interstate 19, which is the thing I'm going to want to talk about later. Then there's a whole just what feels now like a typical slapstick farce sitcom scene of just mixed up tables and orders and things all centered around...
The scenes from Fawlty Towers.
Well, yes. But also, I feel like 100 sitcoms since then, including Frasier.
Well, and before then.
Well, yes, I'm saying including Frasier because that's one we talked about for a very long time.
What's that show?
But like, yeah, you even mentioned before we started recording it feeling like a Sesame Street thing. Like, I feel like Sesame Street absolutely did very similar things with, like, you know, the Grover and that one kind of grumpy blue guy.
Grumpy Blue Man Group. They just like play.
Yeah.
Dance for me. They would love Grover.
They would love Grover. I bet they've interacted with Grover. I bet they've been 100% on Sesame Street. Yeah.
They are Sesame Street now. They have moved in.
Yeah. I'm just imagining Oscar's like can opening up and just like some men, like blue men popping up out of it for some reason instead.
Like, are they small or full size?
Oh, imagining them full size. But okay. It's like one pops up and then another one just like he can barely get his like eyes
Man.
Up.
Oscar's such a sellout now. You're a blue man group. Come on. I liked Oscar back when I was 4.
No, they would then get like very quickly pulled down and he'd come up all yelling at them like, why is he in their can? Why are they in his can at all?
Why are they in his pants?
Can. His can.
Why?
Why are they in his can?
Get out of my can.
Exactly. Anyway,
are we still doing
we're
a recap?
We're still doing the recap.
What is wrong with us? I'm sorry.
We're still doing a recap. So, during all this slapstick nonsense, we have a new character, Mr. Foley, show up, or a new guest, Mr. Foley, show up, and also Bishop goes to make a phone call, which is how Gladys, listening in, learns that he actually is not a hotel inspector. He actually just sells hardware. Henry gets upset with Mr. Bishop for pretending to be a hotel inspector, and Gladys points out he didn't. Henry's just kind of an idiot. Henry spends basically the rest of the episode upset with Mr. Bishop for just existing when Henry was looking for a hotel inspector. Mr. Bishop's upset because he served 3 wrong meals and charged for all of them. He starts yelling about how terrible the service is, but because Henry started to think that the other guest, Mr. Foley, is the hotel inspector, Henry basically just knocks the guy out and claims that he was choking on some cheese and he's giving him the Heimlich maneuver.
I'm sorry. So he knocks the guy out, me just like giggling over here.
I mean, it is played for laughs, but that's what's happening. Later, Henry is so focused on Mr. Foley and how impressed he seemed to be with how he handled the choking emergency that he decides he's going to have a fire drill to show how they would handle other emergencies. In his attempt to find the fire alarm key, which is in a safe, he sets off the burglar alarm, which then brings the chief downstairs to find out what was going on with the burglar alarm, and he has to explain that it was just a thief. But chief, having previously been established as not being fully coherent, doesn't understand the idea that it was a test and is now on the lookout for some criminals and goes to get his gun.
I would say that no one knows what's happening on the show.
Oh, yeah. Also that.
Because this is the show of misunderstandings.
Yes. Speaking of misunderstandings, Petro, who also just doesn't understand because he doesn't speak English. Well, not that the alarm was in English, but he doesn't understand a lot of the things because he doesn't speak English.
But he thinks the burglar alarm is the fire alarm.
Right. So he tried to evacuate the kitchen, and so Henry has to show him the difference in sounds between the fire alarm and the burglar alarm by setting off both again, which makes people come out again thinking one of the two things is going on as neither of them. But the one person who does understand is Petro. He now understands what the fire alarm sounds like. Great. He gets it. Yay. Fire. It's the first time we've actually heard him in the entire episode speak English at all. He goes off into the kitchen and then Henry sets off the fire alarm one last time for the fire drill he was going to do, and it startles Petro so much that he causes an actual fire, tries to tell everyone what's happening. Henry thinks he doesn't understand, sticks him back in the kitchen. He's nearly set on fire. Henry then sprays Mr. Foley with the fire extinguisher. Everyone runs and panics, and it's all more farcical things, and that's when we find out Mr. Foley isn't actually the hotel inspector at all either. Gladys puts out the fire. And then finally, the actual inspectors show up as Henry is kicking out Mr. Bishop and Mr. Foley, and insulting them, and Gladys is attempting to tell Henry that the inspectors are there, and he's so rude that by the time he actually figures out what's going on, they're already walking out, and that's the end of the episode. Yay. Okay, now let's talk. What do I want to talk about for it?
He's tired now.
Understandable.
But your things are Snape with Save Navely. I feel like I just did the skit, but like worse. Like, I became just
I think you reversed the reversal.
Like Missy Elliott?
Yes, exactly like Missy Elliott.
All right, well.
You flipped it and reversed it.
Okay. So who is this show for? This show has to be for fans of Fawlty Towers, but I want to say that I saw when looking for this episode that there was plenty of people have compared these, like, the American versions mm-hmm. of Fawlty Towers, and I saw somebody say that there's certain shows, like Pain.
Mm-hmm.
How many episodes did that have?
9 total.
Okay, apparently they found that show to be funnier than the original.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's fair, because I think if you're younger,
mm-hmm.
you might not have that nostalgia for that. You're mm-hmm. not, let's face it, if you were a kid and you saw the like Phantom Menace before you saw the other Star Wars, a Phantom uh-huh. Menace is your life.
Yeah.
It's your life. You're like, yes, put me in a sand dune. Can we move to Arizona, Dad? I want to live in the desert.
I mean, I loved Return of the Jedi. And a lot of people who saw the original when it was, like, out, or, like, Return of the Jedi, it was dumb, because, oh, who cares about Ewoks and junk? And I was like, that was the first one I ever saw, so, yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like by 1999, people had learned a lot about how to make sitcoms, and you could take the premise from Fawlty Towers, and if you make it again, but actually, instead of just lifting it, I could
make it Third Planet from the Sun?
Yeah, with John Lithgow.
That's somebody else, right?
That's no. Who's in Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, but it's not that.
It's not John Larroquette.
That's Nightcore.
Yes, that's Nightcore.
I can't. He's okay. One, it should have been Third Rock from the Sun.
Yes,
and not John Larroquette.
Yes, I agree.
And. Because I can't think of anyone that's American but also British.
Yeah, and also, Joseph Gordon-Levitt should have played the wife. Just because you said it should have been Third Rock from the Sun.
No, it should have been that guy. The other people from that show. The guy.
French Stewart?
Yes!
Oh my god.
Okay, but he could have been like Manuel's character, but not mm-hmm. like a character. Okay, I think the problem is this Fawlty Towers and a lot of the jokes on the show just fall flat because it just is all about racism and like established stereotypes, and I feel like our humor has evolved past this
mm-hmm.
but the parts that are funny that still work are the like physical comedy yeah. aspects, and like, you know, when the chief comes down the stairs and like has his like it's funny because I'm just like, honey, police chiefs retire and then they have their like issue pistol, which apparently mm-hmm. you just get to keep loaded in your room
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, he just throws that in the drawer. He mm-hmm. like takes his gun and like throws it in the drawer and it goes off and like shoots through the desk. No one even blinks.
Yeah.
Although I think people are kind of scared.
Yeah, they're startled, but then they just move on. And
I know, because this is a fantasy world yeah. where you have to just not be aware.
Right.
Everyone is just in a state of dissociative state
yeah.
on the show.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand. No one's like, no, this isn't okay. This is weird.
Uh-huh.
But that's just comedy, right? That's just comedy.
Yeah.
Comedy is not like the real world. You gotta, like, make a fake world where anything can happen and all of it's bad. Sorry.
Also, again, to go back to our previous life, the service revolver accidentally going off is also a thing that happens in Frasier. That was 20 plus years later, and they did it again. Also, we do have to point out, this show came out 44 years ago.
Please? Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. Okay. We all know that at the drop of a hat slash gun slash pin, the guns are just firing on their own.
I feel like you're saying that as a setup, and I appreciate it.
A setup for what?
For the fact that I was literally 2 days ago talking to you about the fact that shows always have things where, like, if you drop a gun, it going off, and, like, every gun before it can be sold has to go through a drop test.
Nope.
To make sure it won't
go
off.
Are not from any store, you see. These are all guns from before store times. Uh-huh.
The chief had this 3D printed.
No. But they did not have tests then.
Uh-huh.
They didn't have any tests that the guns passed.
Oh, okay.
No, these ones flew under the test star.
Uh-huh.
The radar for tests.
Right. Right.
Can we move on?
Sure.
Okay, this mountain goat?
Mm-hmm.
That, I know there's like a moose in the original Fawlty yeah. Towers or something, but he's really proud about this mountain goat, but it's just there, mm-hmm. and the wife, is she the wife?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
He says you just married into the hotel. He inherited it, and she married into it.
Okay, but I think the thing is, like, it's important that they hate each other, but the way that this plays out in Fawlty Towers seems more natural than it does in mm-hmm. this. This seems like... It's just... I don't know. It just feels weird to me. It just feels like exactly the same thing, but maybe if I didn't know Fawlty Towers at all, it would feel like something different.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay, because we rewatched one of the episodes that
I want to say that I watched this episode before we rewatched this.
Yeah.
So I thought this episode was funnier before rewatching
yeah.
Fawlty Towers, and then realizing that the way the delivery is on that show is just so much smoother, and it also reminds me of, like, the best, like, Monty Python sketches, yeah. too. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah. And I've just now realized an important difference
yeah.
in the pacing of the jokes.
Yeah.
Is Fawlty Towers doesn't pause for a laugh. American sitcoms pause for a laugh. They'll do a joke and they'll pause for a laugh. From the studio audience.
Mm-hmm.
And Fawlty Towers just goes. Like, they just hit the lines. Oh, go. Lines happen. It's like, it's back. It's a quick back and forth. And the script is written for that quick back and forth. And when you say a line that's meant to be funny and then pause for a laugh, it breaks that pacing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where... this loses something, because there is, like, a back and forth quippiness that doesn't feel as funny when you have to pause to, like, hold on it and mm-hmm. think about it.
Well, there are elements that work a lot better, like when they're in the office and the person's ringing, the guest is ringing the bell,
yeah.
and then he just opens doors, like, you know, just wait your turn like everyone else, and the guest, you know, looks around like,
right,
there's no one else here, what yeah. are you even talking about, and And then he goes back in the office, and I'm sure they can hear that him saying, like, oh, that's just, like, our guest, always, like, so pushy.
Uh-huh.
It's, they hate this job. Americans hate in a way that is different than the hate that is being portrayed in Fawlty Towers,
mm-hmm.
because it's... Maybe that's the problem, is, like, you can't ever tell if someone's joking or not in Fawlty Towers, even mm-hmm. if they... You're like, oh, it seems, like, polite almost, like, oh, no, I didn't really mean... You know, right, ha, yeah. ha, 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 ha.
Right.
You know, like, oh, this is, like, a dry humor that is not coming across in, you know, snavely mm-hmm. manner.
Right.
I mean, it's coming across on a snavely manner is the problem.
Yeah.
Okay, what hotel can you get fresh fruit on the night table like this? Where? Is this what hotels are like in 1978? Is this what Elvis was getting? Because I get it then. I mean, Elvis could probably get whatever he wanted in his hotel room.
Yeah. That's the thing is, like, a lot of times, if, like, a hotel has, like, concierge service and such, a lot of times you can get all that stuff. You're gonna pay for it.
Wow, but you'll get that's it. Threatening. You're like, you're gonna pay for it, but you'll get it.
I mean, the one thing is when he's like, I wanted to have, like, a king-size bed and a southern view. I'm like, well, okay, if they don't have a room with a southern view that has a king-size bed, you're not gonna get that. But he's like, he wants a, one, you kind of want it to be spotless. But if he's like, I want linen sheets and two woolen blankets and a bowl of fresh fruit on the night table, like, okay, we can do all that. But, like, they'll charge you for it if that's not what the room normally has.
This person should have looked up on Yelp. I also forgot kind of what phones were like before.
Uh-huh.
You know, because... You would have been turning the dial at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You would have been doing, you know, the rotary phone style.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was very expensive to call places that were... That's wild.
Yeah.
Now, I who even knows? I don't even know what it is now.
Yeah.
It is not the same at all.
Yeah.
Now, we're robots.
Well, also, like... we just have to reference the Fawlty Towers episode because we watched it, I feel like. But, like, the Fawlty Towers episode was from, like, a few years even earlier than this, and there's this line, point where, like, the equivalent of Mr. Bishop here wants to, like, reserve the TV to be on BBC Two at a particular time because there's a show he wants to watch, and it's like, oh, he wants to reserve the TV in the hotel. The one.
Is that what he means?
Yeah, because then he's like, okay, could I maybe rent or hire a TV for my room? Because what he wants to do is make sure that there's...
When did the original Fawlty Towers come out? You know I'm gonna ask.
It was 75. So Snavely was in 78. Fawlty Towers started in 75.
Okay, in 75 you didn't... I don't know about this kind of inn.
Mm-hmm.
So you just had a room.
Mm-hmm.
And you had no TV.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do there?
Sleep.
It sounds like a prison.
I mean, I think the point is, like, you're there. You're not there for the hotel.
Y'all share
the
bathroom. Y'all share a bathroom down the hall.
Uh-huh.
Can't even watch... your programs. You right. know, you can't watch, you know, ID.
Yeah, which is such the, like, the thing you watch. Investigative
Discovery Channel, if you don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's the one with all of the true crime, and it always seems to be Forensic Files, because there's 7,000 episodes of that show.
Yeah, and every hotel that has a, like, weird lineup of channels that don't exist anywhere else, it's got ID.
No, we have all those channels, Dave. We have all the same channels.
I'm saying, I feel like there's always, like, a weird, like, because there's, like, 30 total channels, and it's, like, this is not Somebody who has 30 total channels at home does not have this combination of 30 channels.
I mean, it depends on their psychic connections.
Right.
I don't even know what we're talking about now.
I don't know. I'm and letting you, even, if you have things you want to talk care. About.
I don't have things. A cheese omelet. I think we're trying to do too many things in this episode is the problem. And we're going all categories. So I'm just going to say, since we watched the Hotel Inspector, like, I know not everything in this pilot is from just the Hotel Inspector, because we also have the Kitchen Fire, which was a different episode of Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, that was the episode Germans, which we didn't rewatch.
But there's so many references, you know, with the wine, and like, he gets like a cheese omelet and he asks about if the vegetables are frozen. Mm-hmm. The vegetables.
Vegetables, yes.
I enjoyed that. I know that's just how they said vegetables, but it was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have that. It wasn't as good. But, I mean, he was still like a good pushy character. We're all pushy.
Yeah.
Being American is like, you are all that guy. We're default that guy.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the problem, is like, when you're default always grumpy...
Yeah.
Why do we want a show where everyone's just, like, miserable? Like, it doesn't feel miserable. Well, it feels miserable in a different way.
Yeah.
And I don't... I
Yeah, the thing is, like...
It's like, the comedy just lands better.
Yeah, well, what I think it is like... the difference is, like, in the original version, he's just... The character is just sort of, like... fussy and talks weird and wants strange things, and that's a part of the conversation that's happening. And so when he wants things most people aren't asking for, you're just like, oh, this guy's just got his own deal. Like, he's just got his own deal, and that's what his thing is. But this, in the American version, he's just pushy.
Well, I do like when Snavely is like re-putting the one guy in the other table, and he was like, this isn't by the highway. Whiz, whiz, whiz.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the sounds of the cars by the highway, but I love for the other person, he was like, that was a park. It was like right by the highway.
Yeah.
Highway 19. Yeah,
Interstate 19.
You know, that's where all the ghosts are. I heard that there's a woman in white over there. And even farther down the road, there's a house with a balcony with a woman in black. Just crying and weeping. A widow.
Uh-huh. Okay. I want it, because you brought up the interstate, I want to talk about this. There's a reason I was asking you earlier. I wasn't sure if he said Interstate 90 or 19, but, like, hearing it a couple times, I think he definitely says 19. And I was like, that something about that stands out to me and feels weird. So I looked up Interstate 19. Interstate 19, one, interstate implies it's between at least two states.
Mm-hmm.
Interstate 19 is exclusively in the state of Arizona. It is one of the shortest, what are called, like, primary highways. Okay. Or not the shortest. It is one of the shortest.
No one can see.
Yeah, I know. But
your
my air quotes. I know.
Yes.
I feel like people.
What's
could
a primary highway?
So it's the ones that only have the two digits. So we've got like 95, and then there's 495.
Okay.
Which
what,
is basically
does that
like
mean between four states.
It means it's a little offshoot of 95. 95 is the main interstate, and then it'll have a little offshoot that's like 495. So it's connected to 95.
So it gets a bigger number, and it's 4, because it's the fourth offshoot from 95?
Yes.
Oh, so is that why there's I-95?
Yeah, I-95 is the main one.
Uh-huh.
And then...
But there's not like 195, it's like I-95, isn't it?
Right. 95 is the primary, because it's only two digits.
Oh, got it. Got it.
And then
it.
You add something else at the front.
I feel like I-95 is like the whole place.
Yeah, it literally goes from Maine to Florida.
Yeah, we all know about that. We all know about... Okay, so where's 19? Arizona only.
It's in Arizona.
And connects Arizona to Arizona.
It connects Tucson and Phoenix to basically to the Mexican border.
Right.
And it is a total of 63 miles long.
Oh.
It's very, very short.
I mean, and they could have just done it 6 more miles, right?
Hey. But that implies, by saying you could see Interstate 19, that implies that Snavely Manor is in somewhere along this 63 miles of Arizona.
Yeah, you think that the Road Warriors stopped here?
Yes, 100%. No, they couldn't even have gotten
here. Pralines in Arizona?
I mean, probably somewhere.
I don't know if pralines are a thing there. Where are they a thing?
I mean, they're all about now.
They're not all about.
They're all about.
They're not all about.
Anyway, I just thought it was a very specific number for them to choose.
Yeah, you did us a justice by that investigation, Dave. Thanks. Back to the main story now.
No, that would be 95.
Okay, so we find out that the phone call that, let me order dinner, and then run away where I'm on the phone.
Yeah.
Where your receiver's greasy. So the wife has like a greasy head?
No. I think he went up to his room.
Yeah, I know.
But
that's their room.
Oh, you're right. I forgot. Yeah.
So I think that's the thing is to say like there's like, the phone is oily or something reason.
Again, in the original, it's set up that he doesn't like to make phone calls because phone receivers are all dirty. And he doesn't like to put them against his head. They don't say that in the American versions. That's the setup.
Yeah, but he's still... you can have him complain about it because he's already complaining about everything.
Yeah, but it's like... that just seems to come out of nowhere.
This is where I just wrote... This show is life without a filter. And then we watched the original Fawlty Towers, and I remembered what Fawlty Towers actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so funny in the original like Hotel Inspector's episode about, you know, Basil.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. I had to say it a certain way. I want to say Basil, and that's not
same. It's always Basil when it's somebody's name. I've never heard a person named Basil.
Exact. I'm not saying there's not a Basil out there. Probably is a Basil.
Yeah.
But like, it's Basil, and it's also the name of like every like red wall rodent name to me for some reason is also that.
Was Basil the name of the guy in The Rescuers?
Could have been. That might be why.
That might be why. Now I'm wondering, like...
I have a rodent-y idea in my head. Wait.
No, that's Bernard.
I also like how the character of, like, Connie... So you have, like, the nod to Connie Booth.
It's the Great Mouse Detective.
Yep.
Because he's named after... the guy, I think Basil Rathbone or whatever, who was known for playing
the saxophone,
known for playing Sherlock Holmes.
Obviously.
So that's why the mouse, who's the Sherlock Holmes equivalent in The Great Mouse Detective, is named Basil. So that's why you have an idea that there's a mouse named Basil. Sorry. Moving on. Connie, you're saying.
I like that. That's kind of a nod to Connie Booth.
Yep.
And then because that's who played that character. But we have like lots of nods to like the original Fawlty Towers, basically to the point where most of it is just the same exact skits and bits, but not as good. Even though I don't think it's an actor thing. I think it's you want it to be something else.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know. This show's kind of just offensive and over the top and not funny enough to justify it. Like, maybe people want to make that argument for, like, Seinfeld that has problematic episodes. And I think, but that's also why it's memorable, right? Like, it pushed boundaries that other shows weren't allowed to go to. As we found out, most shows just disappear.
Yeah. There's a lot of shows that just disappear.
And we're here to remind you about how bad they were. And this is a good example.
Or good.
Yeah. And or bad, as in the case of this case, show.
Yeah.
But I never really finished talking about the episode, but it's just like I don't know if I have more to say. Do you?
I have some things, yes.
Okay, so let's hear it.
So first of all, I want to say it. So in the original episode, the second guy that, you know, he thinks might be the hotel inspector orders a cheese plate. In this one, he orders a diet plate from the menu. And I was like, what is a diet plate? The fact that, like, they say diet plate a number of times, I was like, that has to be a thing. Like, that must just be a thing. So I looked it up. And what I found is, like, I found some really fascinating things. But I'm going to do my best to not digress too much here.
Okay.
So apparently, starting around the 50s, there was a thing that you could get in restaurants a lot of times called a diet plate. It was a restaurant diet plate. And it typically was like just a plain hamburger patty, sometimes referred to as chopped steak, with some cottage cheese topped with canned peach and a lettuce leaf on which reposed one slice of tomato. Here's a picture.
Oh my goodness! Amazing.
Yeah. In fact, this picture has a cherry in the middle of the cottage cheese between three canned peach slices.
Okay, so Mr. Snavely picks the diet plate up and was like, puts it in his face and is like, smells great.
Yeah.
And like, dips his nose like in the cottage cheese.
Yep.
Ew.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was one of the things I wanted to mention is like...
So when did the diet plate die off? When did you say it started in the 1950s?
It started in the 1950s and still around, clearly, in the 70s, if they were still talking about this.
It seems very almost like an Atkins diet thing, because it doesn't have a bun.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, okay. The hamburger cottage cheese peach lunch fell into deep disfavor in the 1980s. And so they were commonly called old style, so-called, or 1950s diet plates. And critics argued that in most cases, they're not only insipid, but also contained more calories than other menu items.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
I liked how the diet plate wasn't diet.
It's a bowl of cottage cheese.
But cottage cheese is a thing you eat when you're on a diet.
This is a pretty big bowl of cottage cheese.
Yeah, but it's got fruit. Okay, it has a tomato and a lettuce.
And a canned peach.
Yeah. Look.
I'm saying that looks like a plate that has a lot of calories in it for something that you're supposedly eating for a diet.
Have you ever seen country fried steak with gravy and mashed potatoes?
Yeah, that's not a diet plate.
14,000. Like, that fills up the Millennium Falcon. That's like the Millennium Falcon of meals compared to, like, the, I don't know, the Halo little guy, zombie. What's that little one? Little guy, little beast. Viper. No, it's like Banshee. No, that's a different one.
Ghost?
Yeah, didn't I say ghost?
Did you?
Ghost the big one? Or the little one?
I know which one you're talking about, but I'm like...
Okay,
the one I did the vehicle fist bump.
Okay, something that only fits a very small space puppet. Just this very small little one. Small, you know.
Yeah.
like the size of Basil. Basil the Mouse Stronaut. Super tiny, sliding through space. What's happening?
I don't know. I'm just letting it go. I'm enjoying it. Oh, I'm letting it happen.
17 hours long. Please just stop me. I feel like this was a parody of Fawlty Towers and not an homage. I'm not saying I wouldn't have watched the second episode. I don't think that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want what this episode was.
Yeah. I honestly think, like, I didn't think about it until this. I really think what it comes down to is, I mean, like, a lot of it comes down to the timing because they pause for the audience to laugh.
It ruined Urkel and it ruined the 1978 Snavely.
Because, like, when you watch Fawlty Towers, this is also a thing in Monty Python. Like, when you watch, like, the, like, Monty Python's Flying Circus, the jokes are back and forth and back and forth. They're really quick. And then, and, like, you hear people laughing, but, like, the...
I don't think those people are there because, like, they're on, they add in a laugh track.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, because they don't pause for a laugh, the joke is the
this is Betty White and she's a legend and people need to be there to witness that, okay?
Right. That's the thing is, like, she does some things where, like, that are funny, where the silence is built into the action. Like, there's the bit where, like, she's trying to get rid of the mountain goat head again, and so she goes to, like, talk to Mr. Bishop, and she's like, is this yours? And he's like, of course not. And she's like, great, we don't allow pets. And, like, grabs it and walks off. And that's a long silence where a laugh is happening behind her while the scene is still happening.
I think the parts that killed it, and the parts that were not Betty White were not good.
Yeah.
I'm not...
Harvey Korman had his moments.
Okay, like, sure, but, like... Okay, I also really enjoy the moments with Connie that I think could have been funny because, like, she's supposed to be, like, going to college for hotel management, and she's kind of, like, learning the ropes.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, Snavely doesn't know what he's doing.
No, no.
Isn't that someone from Harry Potter?
No, there's...
Someone's things that sound kind of like that somewhere.
Yeah, I will say, like, but that's another thing. Like, so Connie, some of the times that the funniest things that Connie does are just when she's just laughing. Really, like, it has this, like, kind of weird high pitched laugh, and it goes for a long time. And that's the thing. Again, the people laughing in the audience are laughing while she's laughing.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you're not slowing down the pace by pausing.
But, like, in the original Hotel Inspectors episode of Fawlty Towers, we have that really, like, good back and forth between, like, Polly and Basil, where he was like, oh, yeah, he wasn't talking to you, he was talking to me, but he was looking at you, and it was just like, everyone's very confused, but it's clearly she's just lying to make him feel better, and to, like...
But they both, like, jump back and forth, and, like, they're looking at, like, the three of them are, like, their eyes are going back and forth between everybody, and they're saying so much, and it never stops.
This show didn't get... It can't have the charisma of people that have had this time working together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if these people work together in the same context as, like, you know, Connie Booth was on Flying Circus in episodes. So, like, I don't know where they met, how long they were together, but they definitely had, like, banter.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, having that kind of... charisma, like, working, like, what is that called, working connection,
I know what you're trying to say, is, like,
it's a magical, and that's what works, and that is not happening here. That's why is Gilmore Girls not just another reboot? It's like in a hotel. She's like working at the inn. It's got really fast banter back and forth.
Yeah, like it definitely.
There's definitely like a snooty waiter type, and like the chef's got a quirky personality. There's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's very similar.
Yeah, and I will say also, like, okay, there is. I know that the guy who played Mr. Bishop, when you look him up, most of the pictures you see are him alongside Carol Burnett. Harvey Korman was on the Carol Burnett show, so like I feel like he probably had worked with him before.
Worked with Betty White?
Worked with the guy who played Mr. Bishop. I don't know if he worked with Betty White before. Maybe he had.
Oh.
But, like, I'm saying, like, that's part of why I'm saying, like, this show could have been good if they took the basic premise and just rewrote it from scratch.
I'm excited for the next pilot to see how it compares.
It made it the longest out of the three of them, so it must have something more to it.
Maybe everything else was bad that year.
Maybe it was. This is right around when Cheers started, but in the context of the time, people love Cheers, so. But then again, the next one also didn't make.
We also loved Class of 96, okay?
Did we, though?
Did we?
Did we, though?
Yes, we did. New York Times said it was going to be a hit show. I want to see every review that's like, blah, 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 it's a hit TV show. And it's just a total flop. I love that.
Yeah.
I believe that's a genuine review.
Mm-hmm.
It's got Hopefully. Heart. It's got heart.
It's got heart. Oh, okay. Very early on in this episode, Gladys is talking to Roger, and she goes to hang up the phone and fully misses.
I don't think we talk about Roger at all.
No, we didn't. Yeah. There's a whole added thing. I mean, I mentioned Roger in my recap. There's a whole added thing in this where, like, Henry's, like, super jealous of this other hotel manager, Roger. But I don't need to talk about that right now. What I want to talk about is that when she gets off the phone, she goes to hang it up. And, you know, it's like an old rotary phone. And she just fully misses the hook. And it falls off. And she just, like, casually picks it back up and hangs it up again. Like, that didn't happen and just moves on. And I was like, I think that is just a legitimate mistake that they
right after that, she called Henry Roger, so that didn't really help.
Yeah, and then, I do like that he's just sort of like, yeah, Roger, you got Roger on the brain, clearly, which feels like how you improvise a response to, like, that feels like when you're in a play and you can't stop and redo it, so you just say a thing to, like, fill in the space of the mistake that you made.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very much like that. And I think that was, like, two back-to-back, like, little mistakes that they just sort of moved through and let it go, which I think is really interesting. I like when they do that because it's, like, people make mistakes sometimes. Sometimes you just say the wrong thing. And, like, you don't need to go back and fix, like, because somebody said something wrong every time.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see people doing that in, like, modern TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they weren't. I feel like you didn't see that even just when we were watching TV as kids. Like,
I
you
think
wouldn't have
you
seen
would
that.
See that if we were watching The Masked Singer.
Well, sure. I mean, like,
we're
a
watching
sitcom.
Big Brother.
I mean, in a sitcom.
Because our reality TV is the closest to live that we have.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, for a 25-minute... This was a 25-minute episode, which is also, like, really long for a sitcom episode.
This is 1978. They didn't have 30,000 commercials. They didn't care about commercials as much back then.
I mean,
they did, but come on. Mm-hmm. It's not now.
But what really got me is that the opening scene, there was a 6-minute long cold open, which is long for a 25-minute show.
That's how shows work. They were delicious with their cold opens. I feel like that's how every show started, with a 6-minute cold open.
Maybe. It just feels so long.
That feels like Dick Van Dyke.
I guess.
It had a 6-minute song.
Also that, yes.
That's like your whole show. That's like half of your show is just like the cold open and your song.
That's true. That's
then
true.
You gotta sum up the rest of the plot in the other 12 minutes. Good luck. I mean, yep. Adventure Time does it. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just going off the rails, as we said earlier.
Okay, one last thing I wanted to mention is, like, I briefly mentioned it earlier, but the very last line when, like, he's all upset because he's clearly just scared off the actual hotel inspectors he's been trying to impress this whole time.
Yeah, because they're obviously the last customers to come in.
Yeah. While he's yelling at the other
two. Also, they're way too obvious. We're like, they might as well be wearing, like, signs on their shirts that are like, hotel inspector.
Right.
They're like, oh, yes, this is a hotel we're inspecting. It has this many rooms and this many things.
Uh-huh. So, the thing that really gets me is, like, after all that's happened, Gladys tries to reassure him and just says, like, never mind, dear. And I'm just like, I wonder if they're... If we were to watch the episode, or if there is an episode that starts with her saying, that ends with her saying that, like, because she's like, never mind, dear, I'll tell you what, I'll help you hang your goat. And I wonder if the one that has the moose also has that line in, like, the original series, mm-hmm. because the way she says never mind there, mm-hmm. like, Americans don't use the phrase never mind like that.
We don't now.
True, but I'm saying, like, that makes me wonder... Was that a thing, or is that another line lifted straight from the Fawlty Towers script that is like, you just wouldn't say it that way?
Probably.
Because, like, what I've never heard an American, other than in this episode, say never mind in the way that where it's like, don't worry, it's okay, you don't need to worry about this thing that's bothering you.
I think you... is this an us thing? Because I know we thought about this when watching the Great British Bake Off or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But I've heard it, like, plenty of places.
But British places, you mean? Okay.
Yeah, exclusively British places. Like, they say it in, like, I've heard Greg Davies say it on Taskmaster. I've heard, like, you know, I've heard, like, plenty of places where
Well, is it a way to have emotion without showing emotion?
I mean, kind of. It's basically a way of saying, like, don't focus on this thing that's bothering... I know I'm saying this partly for people. It's this way of saying, like, don't focus on this thing that's bothering you. Like, it's going to be okay kind of a thing. Like, don't let it bother you too much. Whereas we would say never mind as sort of like, oh, sort again, sort of don't worry about it, but more don't worry about how it's going to bother me instead of don't worry about this thing that's bothering you.
No, I feel like never mind is like, forget about that, it's in the past. It's like,
right.
it like doesn't even matter.
Right, but usually when, if I am going to say never mind, I'm saying that because it's something that you might think is affecting me. And
right.
This way of saying never mind is like, this thing that's affecting you is in the past.
Well, I think that the nice thing is that she's... hanging the goat head right. up with right. him, and mm-hmm. you know, she had been hiding it in the cellar before.
Yeah, in the furnace. She's like, how did you find it in the furnace?
Okay, what is up with, I guess, I must have had a furnace in my house growing up. Everything, Home Alone, right? Uh-huh. Everyone had a furnace.
I mean, yeah, I mean, a lot of people have furnaces, yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't know you could just be sticking in your goat heads in a furnace. Never once thought about it. For some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just hung our goat heads around the house. We didn't put them in the furnace?
No, of course not. You gotta honor... Oh, I forgot his name. I was gonna say the name of that goat from The Witch. Black something.
Philip.
Black Philip, yeah. I feel like you don't honor Black Philip by putting a goat's head, because he is a goat.
No, you honor Black Philip by just digging a hole and putting yourself inside.
Exactly. All right, anything else you want to say on this?
Don't forget to look for Black Philip.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. And with that, this has been the first and only episode of Snavely. Next week, we'll be watching the pilot episode of Amanda's by the Sea. And with that, this has been TGIF Arcade saying, until next week, see you on the flip side of the pond. Yep.
No.
Yep.
Not every episode.
Every episode from now on.
No.
No, no. Just these three.
Oh, woof. Woof.
Probably.
Oh, no.
A Different Direction is a TGIF Arcade production. You can contact the podcast at diffdirectionpod on Twitter or email us at differentdirection@tgifarcade.com. You can also find information about everything that TGIF Arcade produces by following us at TGIF Arcade on Twitter. Thanks for listening.